It's a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to the Mornings with Ed Show. Delighted to have you here on a Tuesday edition of the program. City Council Member Peter Blake just this past weekend announced that he is running for re-election just a year and a half into his current term. So we'll talk to Peter right now. Welcome this morning, Peter. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Am I right? This is early to announce.
It's ludicrous.
Well, congratulations on announcing.
Thank you.
And why are you running again?
You know, when I first thought about even running, I never thought that I would get elected. I was trying to put out some ideas, hoping that other candidates might embrace some of them or might even have the guts to discuss some of them. These were issues that no one wanted to talk about, but they were important to me and they were affecting the quality of life for all of us that live here in town. I ended up winning and I ended up getting really close to accomplishing everything I wanted to accomplish. During the last election, I watched the unthinkable happen where two candidates who should have won the election lost. And two candidates who should have never even placed, one of them won, and the other got more votes than the other two. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, this is how quickly the futures in politics come and go.
Right.
And all the things that I'd worked so hard for could all go down the drain in 2022 if I didn't run.
Now, when you say the two candidates that should have won didn't, why should they have won?
Well, Larry Noakes and Steve Dictorow were infinitely more qualified than the people they were running against, George Weiss and Ruben Flores. Both of them were so much more qualified than I am.
Right. They canceled each other out, though.
There's that theory that they split votes. In the end, I really believe that they took the high road. And understandably, after seeing the ugliness of the last election, they both took the high road. They didn't fight back. And two good men ended up losing a race. They took the high road. My hat's off to them. But I think the previous election and many previous elections to that established that Laguna is a passive aggressive town when it comes to politics. And you have these people that play like, oh, we're so nice. We just want quaintness, and we don't want the developers taking over. But in reality, this is a ruthless town. The politics in this town are ugly. And had those two guys have stood up and fought back, they would have won this election.
Right.
But they were outgunned, and they just didn't fight.
Do you think that Steve could have done more, going out and meeting people? I didn't notice Dictorow's signs, even signage out, until maybe 5 to 6 weeks before the election. I didn't see Steve out there.
Well, in Steve's case, Steve was such a long-term councilman that I don't think he felt like he had to go out and make a splash.
Right.
He had 30 years.
Right.
Close to 30 years.
You think he took it for granted, maybe?
I don't think he took it for granted. I just think he took a statesman approach to running,
right,
which is, here I am, here's my record. How could I possibly lose this? I he, more than anyone, knocked on doors. I never knocked on a single door. I couldn't bring myself to knock on a door,
right,
or ask for money. Those were two things I couldn't do.
Right.
But he did. He kind of was the guy that made walking doors and walking districts happen in Laguna Beach.
Right.
He should have never, ever lost this last election. I don't know what exactly happened, but again, when someone is accusing you of being in the pocket of developers, or someone's making horrible accusations about you, you can either just say, well, you know, those people, everyone knows who they are, and I'm not going to pay any attention to them. I've got to focus on the issues.
Right.
You can either take that approach, or you can come out and say, oh, no, on the contrary, I'm not in anybody's pocket,
right,
and I will see you.
Right. How do you intend to engage those that didn't vote for you last time? How will you engage them this time and maybe get their vote?
I've had 2.5 years now of being myself. I was myself during the campaign. I've been myself during during my term. I think for people who might not appreciate what they read about me in the local papers, because granted, you know, you have no one watches council meetings. The average person in Laguna Beach hardly even knows who our city manager is, or is involved. There's a small group of about 30 ruthless political predators out there that dictate the terms that we all play under. And then there's maybe 300 activists that are part of that email, maybe 5,000 useful idiots that have been mined by Villa Laguna since the early 70s. Right. But outside of that, we have 23,000 residents in this community. I would ask them to just look at where we were in 2018 when I woke up one morning and thought, I've had enough.
Right.
You know, what does the homeless situation look like today as opposed to 2018? What does the downtown and our ability to potentially begin to attract a better retail and dining experience? How are the property rights in this community? How do you feel about design review? How do you feel about planning? How do you feel about City Hall? How do you feel about the future of this community as it grows up and grows out of Hippieville and grows into, hopefully, an incredible community that isn't just a community for third, fourth, and fifth houses for the super rich and then the super poor who roam the streets jacked up on meth?
So you bring up a great point in that 18,000 of the residents may be disconnected from exactly what's happening here and the conversation, and maybe they don't tune into the city council meetings. But let's say one of them did accidentally just tune in. What they see is that on one hand, people are claiming that Village Laguna is just the same 20 old people that want to ruin this town. And that claim is being made by one or two or three of the richer people in town who think their money can control the community. That's from the pedestrian view, I'm saying, sure. Here, right? So every week during public communications, we have the same 12 tired voices, six on this side, six on that side, pushing the narrative that the other side is trying to destroy this town. Do you have the awareness that the vast majority, now the 18,000 that you just spoke of, are sick of that crap?
I don't think they get enough of it to be sick of it. I don't think they wait for their Stu News on Tuesday and Friday like I do, or wait for The Independent to come out, or listen to KX, or really involve themselves in anything.
Right.
You got to remember, these people there's a new group of people in this town that have moved in the last couple of decades. I met a lot of them during the campaign. They're in their 40s and 50s. They have kids. They paid a lot of money for their homes. They didn't inherit these homes from their grandmas. So they have to actually pay the property tax that fuels the $100 million budget. These are the people who are being dictated about the color of their homes, the light fixtures in their house, whether they need a walk-in closet that big. And they're looking for who is causing that problem, who is causing us to not have lights down our walkway, who's causing me not to have windows looking out onto the ocean, who's causing these issues. That is Village Laguna. And sooner than later, they find out who that is. So when they tune in and they see me screaming at somebody, they understand where that's coming from.
Right.
Whether they understand why I'm having to resort to acting that way or not, that's probably going to take a lot longer, but they see what's going on.
Okay. So I'm going to take you to something that you had said in a letter that you had written that I'm quoting you here. The focus of this community's resources will shift to those who are paying the bulk of the property tax that fuels our $100 million budget. We've been at the mercy of these activists who pay next to nothing in property tax and want full control of our town. Fair enough. So are you saying that property owners should have a bigger say in how the budget is spent, or recent property owners should have a bigger say? And because they pay more in property taxes, should the opinion of a renter carry any weight at all?
Well, that's a great point. I was a renter in Laguna Beach for 30 plus years, and only at 56 years old did I buy my first building, which is the Galleries building.
Right.
So I'm paying $20,000 a month in rents between my businesses, my home, and my warehouse,
right,
hardly disqualified me to be able to opine on decisions being made in this community.
Right.
I never meant, and I said every word of that, and I do believe that, but I never meant that to in any way disparage those who had come to this community, had bought their homes, or for that matter, inherited their homes, and were very much a part of this community before it became the hot place to go,
right,
before the MTV shows and before all of that. They were here and they walked the walk. What that comment was meant to mean was that those who are insistent on telling us what to do, who pay nothing, but yet want us to pay the property tax and then not be able to do what we want to do. That's where I drew the line. And that's when I became the voice for people like myself who came to this community, who worked hard and who wanted rights. I don't want my life dictated by Village Laguna.
Okay. Now, you've indicated that Tony's best days of governing are long behind her. You've indicated this on several occasions. Will you know when it's time to quit? Will you be able to go out gracefully at some point?
I never thought that I would go past my first term. Right. I thought that in 4 years, all I wanted to do was plant the seeds and have my colleagues add the water and the sun, and everything would grow and we'd move into La La Land. So I already broke one of the things I said I would never do, and that was, you know, because to run and to get elected and to say you're not a politician, that's feasible. To run a second time, especially after what I've endured in the last 2.5 years, that must mean you're a politician. I mean, I actually have become a politician at this point. So am I capable of walking away? I am. I know that the rate of people that run, get elected, and then run again is huge. The number's huge.
Right.
And I would look at those numbers and I would think, wow, you know, what is it? Is it some kind of a power thing that you come to terms with? You know, I know for a lot of the people that have been politicians in this town, they don't really have anything that defines them.
Right.
Being a city council person defines their entire life, their entire personality. Right. So walking away from that and becoming no one is a very difficult situation. But we have had some of our best council people ever walk away at the right time. Look at Kelly Boyd. Look at Elizabeth Pearson. Look at
some would say they stayed way beyond their time.
Beyond.
And then both of them, they could become editorial page trolls.
I guess we all could.
Right?
You know, now with Nextdoor, we're all a send button away from becoming editorial trolls.
Right. Okay. So there we go.
And actually, you're right, because in the two that I mentioned, I'm sure there are plenty of more, in the two that I mentioned, both have become active since retiring from politics, with Elizabeth now getting very active with ADUs. And Kelly, was kind of like a local gentleman up on the dais. He never attacked people. And I know that when I first got elected, and I would get that call from Kelly, and I'd look down at my phone and think, oh, no, I have to explain to him why I was such a jerk. But he's actually come out swinging ever since, you know, he left the dais. I think there are certain things that you can do while you're an elected official, and certain things once you get out that you can do.
Right.
I have crossed those up.
Okay. In the next 18 months, what do you see as the most pressing issues?
Well, we have existential issues in Laguna Beach every single week. I learned that. No matter what, every single week or two, we have something that if we don't take care of this matter, we're going to lose this community. For me, There's always these, and I'll quote something that Kelly Boyd said, and I'm probably not going to get his words right, but he was asked, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do? And he said, well, he says, I wouldn't allow so many things to get it, to take my focus away from what was really important. And for me, that's something that I'm very careful of. I remember that distinctly, and I always thought to myself that I ran on basically three issues, but they're really, it all comes under a quality of life issue.
Right.
I will not allow people to engage me in things and try to veer me off course. Those are the three things I ran on: property rights, law and order, and a better dining and retail experience. And within getting that right, we will have a great community, because those are the three things that make a great community. You have to feel, I have to feel like my wife is safe walking to Whole Foods at night to get something. I have to feel that your girlfriend and your wife are safe walking to Main Beach. I want to feel like somebody's safe dropping off their kids to play basketball at Main Beach, or dropping off the kids on Forest Avenue. You know, I have to feel that law and order. And I ran on law and order when it was really horribly ugly. By today's standards, it's gotten even more ridiculous.
Right. So do you feel comfortable with Stephanie walking to Whole Foods
by
yourself?
No. No. Matter of fact, as you can see, we just got a new dog.
Magnificent puppy, by the way. I got to tell the audience, magnificent puppy.
Stephanie was taking her out in the middle of the night. And I just... she came home one night and she told me about somebody that was sitting on the corner that she didn't feel comfortable. And at that point, it dawned on me that I see characters in this town that I don't want my wife running into at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. All right. And what needs to be done? So you said you ran on law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You've been in office now 2.5 years, right? I mistakenly said 1.5 years when we opened, but 2.5 years now. What do you need to do further with law enforcement? What needs to happen with law enforcement so that she does feel safe?
Well, with law enforcement, we have many issues. One of those issues is the state of California and laws that we, the voter, have voted for. So when you have things like Prop 47 that allow people to steal up to $950 and get away with it, when you reduce the crime of hard drugs, we're talking meth, heroin, to misdemeanors, you know, these are the things that deteriorate your ability to rein in the common criminal transient. You know, if you're afforded the opportunity to go to jail for 3 months, there's a possibility in 3 months you might actually be in a position to say, okay, do you want to go back to being a meth addict? Or here's your chance. You've been clean 3 months now. Here's a chance to really clear up. When you don't have that break, when you don't have that timeout, and you can just keep on doing meth all day long, and you can keep on stealing up to $950, when you can keep on destroying people's property, trespassing, and getting away with it under the guise of criminal justice and somehow social justice, then you're going to keep on doing it. We're not doing them any favors. We're not doing ourselves as a society any favors. So some of that has to come, and that's starting now. You can see where the country has had enough. They've gotten a taste of what this looks like, and there are some really great assets that you have within the context of Let's rethink how we police.
So when our police stop someone in their car and they pull them out and they sit them on the sidewalk and they discover meth pipes inside, They used to arrest them. Now they're citing them. Am I correct there?
Yes.
So now they're just citing and not arresting those that they discover
with meth
pipes.
You're not getting arrested for meth anymore.
Okay.
You know, and when you're coming into this community, I've lived here since 1988. And I've smoked my share of pot with probably 3/4 of this community at one point or another. Not anymore.
Right.
But, you know, I have never been in a room, party, or even heard of someone I know doing meth.
Right.
It's like, So when someone's coming into this community with meth or heroin and it's prepackaged for sale, they're coming here to supply the transient community.
Right. So back to Village Laguna for a second. And I want to say, again, I'm quoting you here. So these are things that you've said. They're convinced that only they know what's good for Laguna. They ignore the fact that all of us want a small and quaint town, but differ in terms of our desired sophistication levels and cultural vibrancy. So the question for that is, since you know that if it's a 50-50 proposition or a 60-40 or even 70-30 or whatever, how will you govern for everyone?
You know, I've dealt with that, and I've been battered over the fact that somehow or another I say things that show that I just don't govern for everybody.
Right.
I don't govern for everybody.
Okay.
I'm tired of trying to understand what that means and how it could be that somehow or another I got elected by a group of people, and those are the people I'm going to support. And Village Laguna and their supporters, I'm not going to think about governing for. But that's just the way it is. I don't know whether that's the right thing to say or not, but I'm tired of dealing with this, and I would think it's 20%. When I look at these people and I think to myself, you're great. You guys want to be residents? We all want to be residents together? That's great. You want kudos for what you did in 1970 with, you know, the height limits and stuff, you know? I love a great Led Zeppelin album, a great Pink Floyd album, but I don't listen to that all day long.
Right.
So I can't, you know, I can't give you kudos for what you did in the 70s and 80s. At some point, it turned into power, and that's right. All they're about. It's all about that iron-fisted grip on power. So do I govern in a way that governs for all the people? Yes, in fact, I do, because in doing what I do every single day of the week, I help the entire community as a whole. doing what I do to make sure that group doesn't control this community is actually helping the entire community. In terms of all of us do want this town to be quaint. When you look, go ask anyone who's moved here in the last 20 years. Why did you move here? I moved here because it's a small town.
I love this quaint town.
Raise my hand here. I didn't move here. You know, I, and I'm sure many of those people could live anywhere in this country with what I do for a living. I could live in New York, San Francisco, anywhere in the country I want to live, I could live. I chose Laguna Beach because it's small. Now, small and quaint is exactly what I want, but I want sophistication, I want culture, I want all the things that make a small town great. And there's no reason we can't have that. We have plenty of galleries, we have great restaurants, we have great architects in this town that if we allowed them to actually engage in architecture at the level that they're capable of doing, we would have better, more architecturally significant buildings than we have. You know, we can have better retail. Village Laguna got out of our way. If you look at what are the two best districts in town in terms of shopping, it's the North Laguna Gallery Row, which I started, and it's the Hip District. Those are the two areas where you could go, grab something to eat, walk around, check out some cool shopping. The worst district in town is the downtown district. And who over-regulates that? It's Village Laguna. That's where you're going to have the Johanna Felders and the Ann Kristoffs of the world running out to make sure that nothing changes. You know, thank God we put this promenade there.
Before you ran the first time, had you ever had a chance to talk with either one of them? Did you sit down and chat? And was there animosity before you ran with them?
You know, there wasn't animosity because I wasn't involved in politics. I will say that back in 2000, I was opening a clothing store with my ex-wife in North Laguna. And at the time, I had already established Gallery Row. I had started the art walk up there. And this was a clothing store that was down the street. And I thought this was an incredible situation to expand North Laguna to now have really great clothing on top of really great restaurants and everything else. And next thing I know, Village Laguna comes and opposes my project. And Ann Kristoff and this other Belinda Blackadder, they had like 200 signatures in my file. They said that I was a chain. Peter Blake Gallery and Fetna Blake Clothing, somehow that was a chain. Our signs were too similar. Both of them were small little Helvetica letters, but right. That was, you know, it appeared to be a chain somehow.
So it started back then.
Yeah.
All right.
And yeah, it was bubbling below the surface, and all of my friends who had gone through design review all had the same things to say. I'm in an industry that I'm in and out of people's homes as an art dealer.
Right.
And it was, yes, you're right. This is long. It's been in the works for a long
right.
time.
And can you envision, okay, let's say you win another term. Can you envision any compromise down
None.
The road?
None.
None.
None. I look at those people. I look at Chris Katsimatis. I look at Meryl Anderson. I look at these people and I think to myself, I want nothing to do with a community that you run. I look at the initiative that George Weiss and these people are coming up with right now that is going to forever block our ability to have great architecture, to have great buildings, to have great business. No block-long architecture. What do you call the lumberyard? You know, what do you call? It's not that development is bad. It's bad development is bad. And what these people do is via their restrictions, they make it so that the only person who can afford to do business here is a chain. The only person that can afford to build here is a huge builder. And they look at numbers. They don't look at great architecture. It's the small guy like me that's going to go and hire a great architect and then hire a great contractor and say, this is my dream project. This is my home or my business. Let's build a really great building.
What's the best or your favorite or the most meaningful vote that you've cast since you've been a council member?
I fought this pathway thing. Some nutcase professor woke up 20 years ago and decided that he was going to take these sewer and water and gas easements up in Temple Hills and he was going to call them pathways. And the lie was said enough to where it stuck. And next thing you know, because we had people on the council that were too afraid of these people, you now have a situation where people have these quote unquote pathways. So three of the four pathways had never been walked on. These were pathways that you would need a rope to get down.
Was Kelly Boyd one of those council members? at the time?
You know, I would think he was. I don't know where he stood, where Kelly stood on that issue. But I do know that the can got kicked down the road to a point where when a homeowner came to me and said, I have been unable to enjoy privacy in my home for years. I have people walking down these pathways every day, the same people, this woman named Carolyn Wright and Lou Novak. And I realized this doesn't make any sense. The reason, and one thing I've learned, Ed, is when it doesn't make sense, that means it's political. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, I have a high school education. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I can usually look at something really quickly and discern whether there's a suitable answer to that or not. How can we fix that? I'm really fast when it comes to that. I'm intuitive. And when I get to a point where I think, oh, wow, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you impose something like that onto, how would you take someone's property rights and somehow turn a sewer easement into a pathway? And then you don't stop walking when that person has asked you to please stop. And we live in a town that's loaded with walkways everywhere, but you got to walk down that walkway. And when that person says, I'm tired of you trespassing, when the city says, we will never build a pathway there, when the city says that we don't own that property, and if someone slips and falls there, that's your responsibility, Mr. Homeowner. And Mr. Homeowner goes and tries to put a gate to keep someone from falling there and suing them. Then all of a sudden, that person brings it to council and starts to make those people behind that that die start shaking. That's when I know it's political.
All right. How easy is it to convince you of a differing opinion?
Very easy.
So
I'm extremely open-minded.
Okay.
I love to engage people in conversations. You know, I'm a political independent. I can't be a Republican over gay rights and abortion and the extremism on Christianity. I can't be a Democrat over the extremes that we're dealing with right now. And I've never known a time where I could definitely not be a Democrat. When I see what's going on in our country right now, the extremes are settling in, and it looks like communism. I mean, I don't want to sound like some right-wing nutcase.
Well, you do.
Okay.
Well, you do.
All right.
You
well,
I,
okay.
You know, so the minute you say that,
yeah, I know.
It's like, well,
I know. And I did not want to sound like that, but I look at some of the things that are going on right now, and I think to myself, my father was a Greek immigrant. He came in, and he brought in all of his brothers and everyone via these restaurants that they slowly would buy and remodel and build up and then move on. And they brought family members in. They supported these people. The thought that we have open borders right now, the thought that COVID is coming into our country, it's not that
COVID is being spread by the same Trump non-maskers and that ilk that refuses to vaccinate or mask. It's not that. It's coming from across the border.
It's coming from everywhere. Yeah. It's coming. We have extremes on all of it that are doing it. I'm vaccinated.
Right.
I wore a mask. Matter of fact, I was the first person that really stepped in and said, close the beaches, close this town down. And you know, my colleagues at first were like, oh, wait a second, that's heavy-handed. The surfers, the trail walkers, everybody was flipping out. But I was that person that just said, no, shut this thing down. Let's figure out what it is. We don't know what it is right now. Let's figure it out. And then at some point, I was the first person that said, we got to open up our beaches again. We've got to let the public come out and get some sunlight, get some fresh air. We've got to open our businesses back up again. I don't advocate for not getting vaccinated. I got vaccinated early on, and I feel very comfortable getting vaccinated. But, you know, we have to follow our own instincts on all of that. And it's a shame that this thing is coming back again.
Right. So now that the Delta variant is coming back, and I want to go to a couple of other things. I want to talk about the hospital as well and the work that you've been doing regarding that. But yesterday, the governor announced that that state workers and healthcare workers would have to show proof of vaccination or get tested. Do you see that happening in the city and at City Hall?
You know, City Hall...
and eventually maybe even businesses?
It could. You know, City Hall handled this really well. They immediately said, okay, we're not going to put our employees at risk, but at the same time, we have a community that we have to run, and people are depending on us.
Right.
So they let a lot of people work at home so that the potential spread of this wasn't coming in. We put up acrylic shields. We put out sanitizer everywhere. We did so many things. You know, in retrospect, if we were to write a book about what we did as a city, I think 20 years from now, people would read that book and they would think, wow, Laguna Beach really had some amazing insight. And I credit that to my colleagues. John Pietig and Sheree Dupuis did an incredible job in reining the city in and figuring out what they needed to do on their part. Bob Whalen is always, Bob is like the judge. He's even-keeled. He looks at everything. He looks at the evidence. He makes decisions. Sue is like the most incredible fact-finding, you know, for her, she doesn't do anything until she's got the facts and she's had a chance to assess those facts. Right. All of us played a part in turning this whole thing around. And when we look back 20 years from now, I'm extremely proud today. I don't need to wait 20 years. But 20 years from now, we'll look back and they'll say, you know, there was this council and there was these people that were running the city that did a really incredible job. And if you, in relation to the rest of the country, whether you're Florida and Texas and you're at one extreme, or whether you're, L.A. On another extreme, no one really knows where this is all going to fall out. I mean, I look at the people that are taking credit for doing such a great job right now, and I think to myself, I know that I can take credit for what we did because we didn't do anything wrong. Whether it's the promenade, whether it's the way we shut down beaches, when we open the beaches back up again. You know, mandatory vaccination is going to get to a point where the people of this country have to decide that this is what they want. And frankly, if you don't want to get vaccinated, you don't have to. And that means that you can't go to a certain business. You can't get in on an airplane. Right. You can't go to a concert. Right. And if you're okay with that, then that's okay. If the majority of the people decide that this is what they want and they have the votes and the power to make this a reality, then so be it. Okay. And it's not fair to either side, but we're not dealing with, I don't like plastic fences in front of houses.
Right. It's a life and death thing.
We're seeing what's going on in Europe again. Right. You know, we have a tendency.
It's the same reason kids get polio vaccinations before going to school or measles vaccinations. It's that.
Yeah, and there are people that fight those.
Right.
They don't want those. Right.
You mentioned Mayor Whalen. You and he have been advocating for the city with the hospital in discussions. And SB 51 states that hospitals and mental health care facilities have to have a release plan when they let someone go. And that the hospital is really responsible for getting those patients back to where they came from. We can't expect the sheriff's department to come back and pick them up like an Uber type of thing. So how are those conversations going with the hospital?
Well, I'm sure what you just said, because you sounded really smart in it, I'm sure you read that and I'm sure that's what the law states.
Yes.
But that's not what the law states. They can walk right out of the hospital and walk right into someone's house in South Laguna. We don't.
Well, they can, but the law does state that. They shouldn't. So the hospital has that responsibility.
You know, you might have the responsibility to make sure that when I leave here today, I walk out and I get into my car. It says clearly right there, absolutely no swearing. And you have the responsibility to make sure that I don't swear on here, but that doesn't stop me from swearing if I swear. And that, what are you going to do about it?
You make a valid point. I would cut you off after the first one. So the first one, you're getting cut off.
Yes, yes. So what happens at the hospital is that we have the communities. And let me back up a little bit on this.
Sure.
I get calls all the time because I'm that guy that's not anti-homeless. I'm just the person that isn't going to let the homeless destroy the quality of life for my community. So I get the call every time there's a problem. Every time someone sees an extra homeless person or somebody's masturbating on the beach, Peter gets the call. So I started getting these weird calls in South Laguna. Oh, I came home. There's this person sitting in my living room saying this is their house. There's a person in my car. They say this is their car. This was not your run-of-the-mill, there's a meth addict shooting up on or there's a fight taking place or whatever. So I went to Laura Farinella, our police chief at the time, and I said, you know, Laura, can I get some police stats on South Laguna? She said, sure. She comes back with a list of all the police stats in the entire community, where the crime comes from. Right. Most of it, number one, was Main Beach. Number two was something that said Mission on it. Number three was the canyon. The canyon was obviously coming from the ASL. Main Beach was obviously coming from the transient population and our party population that comes to the beach to party. Right. Mission. I didn't understand that. Is that a Mission district that goes from, say, South Laguna to Nye's? Well, how can something Mission? No, that's Mission Hospital. Mission Hospital, sexual assault at Mission Hospital, assault. How does that happen at a hospital? None of this is making sense. Right. So then I start to dig into this. I start to meet with the city attorney, the chief of police, and a couple of other people in the city. And we start, and Krista Johnson, the assistant city manager, and we start looking at what's going on with the hospital. Well, I realize that the hospital has changed. The hospital is no longer just an ER and a hospital. We have become the 5150, which is the phrase used for when someone is having an uncontrollable moment.
Right.
Let's just, you know, put it nicely.
A mental disturbance.
A mental disturbance.
Yes.
That person gets brought to Mission Hospital from all the surrounding communities.
Right.
If someone is ODing, that person gets brought to Mission Hospital. Now, I really appreciate the fact that we as Laguna have that facility for people who are having that moment to come and get better. What I don't appreciate is that person walking out and walking into my residence, home, or backyard, threatening that person and going down to Main Beach and becoming part of our point in time count. We now have 145 or 150 homeless people. Right. I don't know where that number came from. I can't think of 150 people who lost their jobs, couldn't afford to live in Laguna anymore, residents, right, and then became homeless. So when I look at this, I think to myself, something's wrong here. And why are people afraid to go to Mission Hospital? What are they seeing in the hospital? What are they seeing at in the emergency room that's got them nervous and they're driving out to other towns to go? Well, you go there and you realize, oh, wow, there's a really ugly scene taking place over there. There are people that are getting hurt. There are people that are doing crazy things. And what are the other communities surrounding us doing about this? So, of course, I start thinking, well, they need to do their fair share. They need to have hospital centers in their own towns, or for that matter, then pony up the money to get us the security we need and then make sure the sheriff picks up that person that they brought in from San Clemente and brings them back to San Clemente.
Are you having any luck with that?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Okay, so the hospital's on, and then these other cities are on board.
We're starting to work with the sheriff. We're starting to work with, we haven't started to work specifically with other cities, right, but we're working with the sheriff.
The sheriff just got $82 billion from the county. They just got a ton of money from the county. Are they utilizing any of that for the mental health services?
Well, I think they are. Okay. Our Orange County sheriff is smart enough to know that he can't police his way out of the problem. I've heard this phrase, you can't arrest yourself out of the problem. I don't agree with that. I think you can arrest yourself out of the problem. I'd be happy to initiate more arrests than less.
Right.
But you can't police your way out of the problem because police aren't social workers.
Right.
They don't understand what the difference is between someone who's ODing on meth or heroin and somebody who genuinely needs help, or somebody who's incapacitated mentally and needs to go to an institution where we could take care of them for the rest of their lives.
We've talked with Mayor Whalen on many occasions about adding to our enforcement here and hiring maybe some mental health workers. We've got the two officers that do a great job taking care of the homeless at this point and those with mental health problems, but that's just two. So we would need more, and you'd be willing to maybe add 2, 4, 6 more?
I'd be willing to add whatever it takes to enable us to enforce the law and to have a safe community and to also be sensitive to those, including our own residents. I mean, I'm not talking about just people who happen to come here who are homeless. We have our own residents that, you know what, maybe after a few too many tequilas, the wife said something about, you know, the music being too loud and you go unhinged. You know, there are times when maybe a badge and a gun isn't going to do that. Maybe a social worker who's really skilled in dealing with something like this can calm that person down and keep that person from escalating, keep that situation from escalating. You know, this whole defund the police and sending social workers, I think defund the police is ludicrous. Sending social workers is...
Well, I think the term defund police is ludicrous.
It is.
And it's been turned into a political, just stupid football. It really has. Because nobody's really looking at that.
No. But you have to blame the people that started using that phrase. Because what were they thinking when they started saying that? I know what they were thinking. They were thinking that let's add some social workers. Let's go to the root of the problem rather than just, you know, waiting until the problem is happening.
Really, just messaging.
Police. Yeah,
it's
address
just messaging.
It earlier on, and like with all things with politics, it gets mismessaged. somewhere along the line, it gets, you know, because there's always that political hacker that's waiting to take what you just said and spin it back.
Exactly.
And you know, that's something that happens to me all the time.
Has it now?
Yes. Yes. But I own everything I say.
Right.
I think that we should have more social workers that go out with our police officers that could potentially de-escalate. I don't see the value in having police officers who are that outreach to the homeless.
Right.
I think there should be a gun and a badge cop that's there that makes sure that those people understand that, you know, if you cross over that line, I'm taking you to jail. And then when they get called out on a situation like I saw the other day on Saturday where I saw someone unhinged, threatening people, then you send a social worker with that person. You know, my biggest complaint is usually about the homeless industrial complex, which is they're geared towards continuing this problem to make sure that they have a job and that they can they keep getting the funds that they need. And they will, you know, we house 80 to 90 homeless people. What community of 23,000 houses that many homeless people on any given night? Houses. We're not talking about, you know, there's that many people sleeping on our beaches. That's how many people are actually going to have a bed tonight. They're going to have a van that's going to drive them to the beach. They're going to have people there that are going to help them with whatever it is that they need. We're an extremely compassionate community. We're going way beyond what we should be doing.
What would you do to reduce those numbers?
I don't know if I need to reduce those numbers. I'm okay right now with what the Friendship Shelter is doing, and I'm okay with what we're doing at the alternative sleeping location. 2 years ago, I was not okay with the alternative sleeping location. Matter of fact, it prompted me to bring forward an agenda bill to put a security guard there to check for drugs, alcohol, and weapons before someone got in. That, to me, was a way of protecting. We talk about the vulnerable. You know, I don't really look at a meth addict who's causing issues and stealing all day long is vulnerable.
Right.
That's not vulnerable to me.
Right.
But who is vulnerable? It's that female that has to sleep in a room with others, that there might be some guy who's drank a bottle of vodka or is jacked up on meth, and he might rape her in the middle of the night. I want to make sure that those people are not going in. Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think you should be drinking and doing drugs and being in that situation and staying in one of these places. I think these places should be reserved for those who are trying to help themselves get better. We should not be in a position to house you so that you can continue to do drugs and then drive you to the beach in the morning for breakfast and then bring you back, you know, to your housing. That's not what my, as far as I'm concerned, that's not my role as a community of 23,000 in this community. However, it is what it is. But I really think that we can stay on top of them. We can make them understand that this is a community that has no bounds to its compassion. Whatever it is that you need, we're going to help you. The Friendship Shelter, whoever it is, we have county, we have state, we have local, we have federal. We have programs to help anyone who really needs it. If you think for 1 minute that you're just going to be a vagabond that sits around, gets wasted all day long, and makes lewd comments at the people who come here for a week out of the year or the people who live here, then you better not see my bald head around that beach. And I'm at the beach every single day. Every day that I can be there, I'm there every afternoon. I consider this my thousand cuts approach to making sure my community's safe. There are things I can't do legally because of the way the laws are read and the voters voted for those laws. Although going back to the spin, you know, the Safe Neighborhoods Act, which allowed people to steal up to $950 and the, you know, the reduction of prison sentences and the reduction of criminalizing hardcore drugs. You know, that was all sold to us. And frankly, when spun properly, it all makes sense. If you said, hey, rather than criminalizing people because they're addicted to drugs, what if you took that money and you actually helped them and you said, okay, we're going to help you get off the drugs? It sure makes sense, doesn't it? Of course it does. You know, if you're criminalizing someone because they're walking in, they're stealing a loaf of bread, you know, oh, okay, well, come on.
Right.
You know, they didn't go in, they didn't walk in and hold up a bank. You know, right. They stole some bread.
They stole $914 worth of bread.
$914. But when I see videos of people loading up bags and walking out of stores, when I see...
Is that, you're seeing that here? You've
no,
seen
no,
that
no,
here?
No,
okay.
No,
okay.
No, when I see stores being looted, and you know, what I see here, And what I see in Venice and Santa Monica, what I saw on TV happening in Long Beach and Santa Monica last June, you know, we say, well, that's over there. That's an hour away. That's a coastal community, an hour away in the same state with the same mentality, with the same politics and everything as that town is. You could easily see that. And we saw that back in 08 when the tents sprung up on the beaches. We saw that happening in this community. Had we not have done what we did at that time, and it was very intelligent. John P. Tigg navigated us around that situation, and Kelly Boyd navigated us around that. They set up the ASL. The ASL allowed us to be able to enforce our no camping ordinances. You know, we're still very limited in terms of what we can and can't do. But again, for me, I want you to always know that if you're just here living off the backs of my community, if you're here stealing you know, iPads, if you're stealing my kids' bicycles, if you're here to cause trouble, you've got trouble coming.
Let's talk about those that are here and have a tough time affording the housing and the rents here. So affordable housing.
Affordable housing.
What is that? What does that mean to you? What is affordable housing? And can police afford housing here? Busboys, waiters, bartenders. What should the monthly rent for a two-bedroom be? What's affordable housing to you?
Affordable housing to me is housing that allows our elder who's been here their whole life to stay here. Affordable housing to me means that millennial who's grown up here, coming back from college, should be able to live here. Affordable housing to me means that police officer, that employee of the city should be able to work and live here. It's in our interest to keep our elders here. It's in our interest to keep our city workers here. It's in our interest to have another generation, God forbid. Right. People like myself who came here in my 20s and waited tables and built two businesses in this town and became a councilman. It's in our interest to see all of this. It's not in our interest to have permanent supportive housing. I'm adamantly opposed to permanent supportive housing, but affordable housing is another story. Now, how do we get affordable housing here? Well, let's be realistic. You know, a block away from the ocean, taking over a hotel and turning it into a homeless shelter, no, that's not reasonable. And frankly, that's not fair, because there are people like you and I that struggle to be able to live in Laguna Beach, and we should be able to live in Laguna Beach working hard. This isn't some kind of a free, let's have at it situation. However, in the canyon, we have land. We have property in the canyon that could easily become affordable housing. These could become units of, you know, 30, 40, like the live work space that's being built right now, that for 10 years, Village Laguna and Friends of the Canyon and Can Do pulled every dirty legal maneuver in the world to stop. We should be able to have affordable housing in the canyon. And I'm going to do everything I can in my second term to make sure that we have, and real affordable housing, not guys like George Weiss that talk about affordable housing, but yet do everything in their power to stop ADUs and density. You know, make up your mind. You can't have both ways. If you really believe in affordable housing, then you rezone and you make it happen. And then when that affordable housing gets built, that's not affordable housing for some yuppie who can afford to pay $4,000 a month for the two-bedroom you just mentioned. Right. That is capped at a price that the average millennial can pay who might be designing websites.
So what's the first step?
The first step is to let the political action committees like Village Laguna and Can Do and Friends of the Canyon and these groups know that your day is done. We're not listening to this anymore. We're going to move forward. We're going to build. There's a group of people right now that are on the housing committee. There's this young guy named Alex Runagi. Mm-hmm. Alex is a very smart kid. I call him a kid because he's a kid, but he's a young man.
Right. He's 23 years old. Yeah.
But yet, you know, well, in this town, that's a child. you know, in this town, when I'm like the youngster at 58 now, but here's a young man. Thank you. Here's a young man who's brilliant and he's behind the scenes and he's making all of this happen. You know, of course, politics are always going to get in the way of this because we're going to muddy the waters between equity and being able to house people. If you look at places like Aspen actually has programs in there that allow city workers and people, not just city workers, but busboys, waiters, even limo people who drive buses and limos to be able to afford to live there. We have to address this issue. None of us wants a town that's going to be just the super rich and the super poor, because that's where we're heading right now. You know, when the average home costs $2 million and we can't have people like us owning a home in this community, that says a lot about the future of this town. If we don't do something and do something quickly, this town is going to turn into San Francisco. San Francisco is a perfect example of what happens when you don't nurture the middle class, where all you do is you pseudo help the homeless and the super poor, and you allow them, you give them, you know, in the guise of their civil rights, the ability to tent on the sidewalk.
What do you consider middle class, by the way?
Middle class to me is, I consider myself middle class.
Do you?
Yeah.
$20,000 grand a month in rent you can cover, and you're considering that middle class, right?
No, $20,000 a month in rent. That means you're making $250,000 a year, which makes you're making half a million.
So you don't. That's not middle class.
No, that's upper middle class.
Okay, all right.
Upper middle class, and you know, I mean, when we talk about one percenters, there are very few one percenters in this world. Middle class to me.
That's why there was just one. That's why it's just the 1%. Yeah. That's why it's just
And I've been reminded in the art world by dealers that it's not a 1%. It's actually a 0.1%.
Right.
Middle class to me, I would say, is making $70,000 a year.
All right.
Trying to potentially look at having a child and raising a family. These are the people that, you know, could live in a 1 or 2 bedroom apartment. You know, this is. That's to me what middle class is. $500,000 a year is upper middle class. What we need to do is figure out how to get that. And a lot of this, you know, what I'm doing right now in the gallery is kind of groundbreaking in terms of, you know, Steph and I have moved into the gallery.
Right.
And we're living there now. And something similar just got approved on Forest Avenue, where someone's going to be living and working upstairs. And from what I understand, there are 4 or 5 on the books right now, and probably another 20 people who are looking at this as a future situation. As we start to, you know, COVID opened up our eyes to living and working in the same place. You don't have to separate live and work anymore. And we can, even if we get a lot of work done at home, we can have like these co-working places that you go, you rent an office for a while, you have a conference room, you have all of the amenities that a full-blown office, internet, you can go there at 2 o'clock in the morning and work. There are all these great things that you can do. So our ability to live and work at home, and this is where the millennial thing is going to work. We're going to be able to take that millennial coming back from college and say, okay, you want to write code, you want to design websites, you want to do whatever it is that you're doing, you could live and work in this place. We're going to have to change the zoning. We're going to have to make things. You know, I got complaints during COVID that I can hear them typing next door all day long and I'm sick of it. Okay, well, that person's having to earn a living during a global pandemic.
Right.
I even had this political predator named MJ Abraham wanted me to resign because I was living in my place before I got approvals and wanted they did a public record search to see what my, you know, all of my permits and everything. This is what they do. This is how they stop all of everything from moving forward. Oh, that looks like density. He just moved into his gallery. That means more people are going to be living in the downtown. That means they're going to float that argument that people could live. That means they'll build things upstairs that people can live in. Oh, we got to stop this. Nip it in the bud right now. You know, this is how those people work.
So you have a council meeting tonight.
Uh-huh.
Do you look forward to going to these
things?
Love it. You love it.
I savor every moment of it. Usually around Saturday before that Tuesday,
right.
I start thinking, geez, Saturday. 2 more days.
So what's going on tonight? What are we going to talk about tonight?
Tonight, you know, we're looking at getting this thing resolved with this magazine thing. I'm so sick and tired of Heidi Miller's rants about the magazine thing. You know, she has an outdated business. She has a loading zone in front of her business. That's a loading zone. That's not a grab a magazine zone. But we put parklets there, which in turn drive people up to that part of PCH, which no one would walk to. Rather than saying thank you, she accuses us of closing down her business and then ceremoniously goes out and closes her business down on 4th of July weekend just to spread more discord among the council and everybody else involved in these decisions. Well, tonight, we're going to give her her own parking space in front of her clothing store for 30 minutes where someone can come and shop, and we're going to put a loading zone across the street. I have no reason to think that that's not going to happen. And then she will end up with everything she had before, only now she will have five parklets on that side of Ocean, which are dragging people to that part of PCH. Because otherwise, why would someone walk there? The movie theater's closed. Starbucks is gone. Everything is gone unless you're walking to get something out of the gas station. Why would you walk that far? So now we've given people a chance to walk up, to get that far, to have a couple of margaritas and a taco, swing around the corner, buy some clothes from her place, maybe look over while you're at the Marine Room parklet and think, hey, you know what? I'm just sitting here. I'm sick and tired of my friend and all his nonsense. I'm going to go get a magazine and read about, you know, the hot cars or whatever it is that you're reading about. We, you know, we have no reason, you know, when people like Heidi Miller create the ruckus that she created over the last month, if she came to me a few weeks ago or a few months ago and said she hadn't received grant money, I picked up the phone, I called the city. Within a matter of days, she had that money in her account. It turns out she hadn't filled things out properly. She got that money right in her account. No sooner did she do that, she went and attacked an artist in the canyon who was selling out of the canyon that shouldn't have received any money. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we engage in. Come and say, I need help. You know, Bouchard's legitimately lost some parking spaces in front of their things as a result of the promenade. Right. Well, you know, the daughter, as someone who thinks outside the box, came to the city and said, look, I need some help here. Within a matter of hours, Sheree Dupuis had a pickup zone specifically for that drugstore right behind her, okay? So now you can pull up, you can call in and say, hey, I need my prescription pills. They bring them right out to you. There's a parking space there waiting for you. We had a situation where we were looking at people not being vaccinated, and how are we going to get vaccination? You know, this is some of the ploys they try to get rid of the promenade.
It's the difference between taking a problem directly to the city and directly to the city council or taking it to social media.
Taking it to that's social media will not work. Right. And that's what this is all about. If you do things that are politically motivated, if you go to Tony Eisman and Tony comes up on the dais and says, oh, I used to, if there was traffic on Ocean Avenue, I used to pull over and get a magazine. Now I can't anymore. When you do stupid things like that and you're engaged in BS at that level, then you're not getting anywhere. But if you come and you say, I need help. I can't vaccinate people. I'm a vaccination place now at Bouchard's. I can't vaccinate people on Forest Avenue because of the promenade. Like, what are you going to do, vaccinate people while people are walking up and down with their ice cream cones? No. Sheree Dupuis gets on the phone. She calls the West Coast manager for Fritz Duda, and she gets the Laguna Drug Center and makes that happen.
36 parking spots.
30, that's the parking aspect that she just did. Right. She just got us 36 parking 36 spaces extra that we can use with our stickers as a result of all this Heidi Miller stuff. But what a lot of people don't realize is that she's the person who got on the phone and called the Laguna Drug that's owned by Fritz Duda, and she made that whole vaccination thing happen with Bouchard's. So that now our residents had a place to go and have plenty of parking and get vaccinated. These are the things that happen behind the scenes so that when the Michelle Mondas and the Eb J. Abrahams and the John Thomases and the Michael Morrises of the world, when they're spinning their nonsense on Nextdoor because they've got nothing better to do with their lives, all you have to do is pick up the phone, call one of your council people, call Sheree Dupuis, call one of the people that can make things happen. We have an entire new staff at the city, but nobody would know that. You know, we have a new city manager. We have, you know, our new chief of police. He's our interim chief of police.
Hey, by the way, what happened to the old chief? Please tell us why that happened. What did he do?
Do you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to know. and I'll tell you why. You know, we have a council that's leaking right now. We have a council that's leaking closed session. It's George and Tony Eisman. George Weiss and Tony Eisman are leaking closed session. And as soon as we find out something and it gets repeated, then it looks like all of us said it.
So is it that you know what happened and you just won't say?
No, I don't know what happened.
I got to be honest with you. That was curious.
I am curious too, because for all intents and purposes, this guy looked like a great guy. I will say this. I felt that Jeff Calvert should have been our chief of
police.
Yeah. The thought of Jeff Calvert being our chief of police, it makes me so happy. I love that guy. 20-something years he has spent. He's not only a great cop, but he's an educated cop. He's a smart guy that handles matters properly. And I'm thrilled. I'm watching him blossom right now in this role. Right. And it just brings me great joy. It's not my job to determine whether he becomes the chief of police.
Right.
But I'll go on the record saying this is the best chief of police we could ever dream of having. As far as Thompson goes, I never met Thompson. I never talked to the guy. I heard that he was a kind of a law and order. That's the first thing I asked, is he law and order? You know, again, my employee is the city manager and the city attorney.
Right.
Their employees are everyone else. I don't involve myself in their decisions. I empower the city manager and the city attorney to do what they do for this city. And then they go off and they make their own decisions on who they hire. They made a decision to hire Chief Thompson. Chief Thompson, somehow or another, and the city decided to part ways. Now, there was a love affair going on during that time. And everyone was all, you know, this is great. It looks like we have a great chief. The police, the union thought that he was great. The staff thought that he was great. Everything was great. I only ask that anyone who's wondering about this, ask yourselves, have you ever been in a relationship with someone for a few months that you thought you could marry and that this person was absolutely perfect? And then all of a sudden, some little things start to come up on both sides. And you realize, oh, God.
Yeah. Not the best relationship that I ended up getting
into.
Maybe that kind
this
of thing.
Was maybe this was a chemical, you know, attraction. Maybe this isn't the type of long-term attraction I thought it was. That's where I would be willing to go with this, with Chief.
Right.
I think the chief realized that maybe Laguna wasn't the place for him. And I think to some degree, maybe Laguna realized that this wasn't the place for him. I'm speculating. Because again, I don't want to know, because as soon as the council gets told, that gives the leakers an opportunity to leak it. And then all of a sudden, it's like sitting at a table and someone farted. Everyone's looking at each other like, who did that?
Right.
You know, we know who did it. And I don't want to even be thought of as that person that did it. And I would rather not know.
I hate to say goodbye on the note of a fart, but you know, you know, that, you get off on a high note here. So Peter Blake, city council member, just announcing this past weekend he's running for re-election. Thank you so much for coming
My
on.
Pleasure.
Thank you for an honest conversation
My
with us
pleasure.
This morning. And will you be knocking on doors?
No, you don't knock on doors. Okay. I don't ask for money.
We'll talk to you down the road, Peter.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.